Hello, I'm Estelle Kelly, retirement life coach, and together with Alice Mantell, a Sydney-based lawyer and author, we are going to dispel some of the unknowns and uncertainties that professionals have when they begin to think about retirement. Together, Alice and I hope to impart some really useful information to enable listeners to face retirement and retirement planning without fear. Alice is the author of Every Woman's Guide to Retirement, a comprehensive book for Australians. And you can purchase a hard copy of this book or an electronic copy at Alice's website, mantelladvisory.com.au. Just recapping, in this series of Facing Retirement Without Fear, this segment is future-proofing your retirement. And so far, we've spent some time looking at housing. Now, we found that we ended up with part one and part two. But today, Alice is going to help us. We're going to deep further into finance. But Alice, to begin with, what do you mean by future-proofing your retirement?
Well, as much as we're possible, the idea is to put in place some steps that will minimise the effect of any unexpected shocks or issues that can arise at any time. We can't anticipate the future. We don't know what's going to happen, but we can put in some steps to minimise the effect on us. It's a bit of the case of preparing for the worst and hoping for the best. If you think about it, at the age of 65, you can expect to live another 20 to 25 years, and an awful lot can happen in that period. We could have an accident, or we could just have a disability. We could have a chronic disease. All of those things require putting in some steps that can make the impact of those sorts of conditions far less. And there are things you can do to protect your own interests. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to talk about finance today, but I want to make sure that I just want to stress, I don't consider myself a financial advisor. I do actually have a piece of paper somewhere which says I did a little certificate in financial planning, but I'm not relying on that. Mm-hmm. What I am relying on is both a lot of very serious research into this issue, and also my experience as a family lawyer. Now, one of the things in family law is, of course, when couples decide to split, is the issue of finances. And it was incredibly disappointing to me to find out that many women, and this is not age specific, let me just say this, it's young women, old women, any women, there are a lot of women who simply are not very interested in the detail of their financial situation. Firstly, that they might not be personally interested because they think it's really boring. Mm-hmm. Or secondly, they might actually be prevented from having a role in the financial decision making. So the partner says, I can look after the finances, just sign here, dear, and you'll be right. And let me just say, this is not about education necessarily, and it's not about income. This happens an awful lot across the board, where women just simply say, well, that partner's doing a good job, everything gets paid, you know, that they've organized the mortgage, whatever, and they just go along with it. Mm-hmm. And that has very serious ramifications as you get older.
Yeah, so that's that sense of having a control over your personal finances. Yeah, and like you say, we don't know what's around the corner, but we can do something to at least prepare for what's ahead. Yeah, so now, how interested are people in their finances? Speaking personally, I know in a couple of decades before this one that I'm in at the moment, I thought, not like your first point, Alice, so boring. But,
yes. It is, and that's really true. And I think there's a convention in our society that women aren't good at numbers. Let me just say, I don't think that's the case at all, because Most women run the household budget. They know how much they spend on food. They know how much the kids' uniforms cost, all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think the role of women in managing household finances is very undervalued. And just to prove it, I've got a little quick quiz that I'm going to just read out and see how many of our listeners actually know the answers to these questions. So, first question, do you have a mortgage? If so, who is your lender? Two, how much do you still owe on your mortgage? Three, do you know how much you owe on your credit card today? Can you tell me what the rate of your credit card is? And if you've got several, what the different rates are?
Well,
I bet you not many people know that.
No, that's true.
Okay. And the final question is, as I said, it's only going to be a little question. Can you name two upcoming bills in this month, February, that are due this month and how much they're going to be? So, the question for you is, how do you feel about that? Do you think that you're in control of your finances?
Mm.
So the idea of future-proofing is to say to you, know how much, be able to answer those questions easily and say, yes, I know. It's not, it gives you a sense of control about these events. It gives you a sense of control about knowing how much your income is and can you manage to pay those various bills off. It's not a guarantee. Future proofing in this sense is not a guarantee, but it is certainly better than doing nothing.
Yeah. And when it comes to retirement, you know, we are encouraged to plan financially for retirement. All the advertising that we see on our screens every day is all about creating wealth for our future. Yeah. But that's that sense of control. I think you're so right, Alice, that, you know, it's just overwhelming if unless we do try to take some steps to manage things ourselves. And this is where your advice is helping us to reduce the fear which creates that feeling of being overwhelmed. So, yeah, you know, I agree with everything that you've said so far, Alice. Okay, so if we're going to take back more of a sense of control over our finances, what are the things that you would recommend that we do? What are some steps we can take?
Well, there's a whole lot of things, and they're really simple, but they do require some effort. So the first thing is review your debts. Now, it's such a simple thing, but you've got credit card debts, you might have personal loans, and then I'm going to talk about mortgages kind of separate to this. But so pay off those debts which have the highest interest first. So credit card debts, do not leave them just sitting there. Because if you were to look at your credit card statement, you would see a little message that says, if you only pay off the minimum amount of this debt, of this bill, you're likely to owe X amount of dollars in 10 years' time. Mm-hmm. And that is not what you want. You need to be paying off your credit card debt as much as possible every single month, because the wonder that is compound interest that we all know about, which helps us accumulate savings, also helps us accumulate debts.
So Alice, can I just interrupt you there? Look, I'm not sure that everybody does know about compound interest. So can you just explain that before you go on?
I wouldn't say I'm great. It's just that interest, it's interest upon interest upon interest, basically. So you have an amount of $100. So at the end of a year, you might have a debt of 100 or a savings of 110. And then the next amount of interest is not on 100, but it's on $110. So you get another little bit. So, but in terms of debt, when your interest rate, and let me say a lot of credit card debts are in fact something like anywhere up to 21% per annum, that is a lot of money. Mm. And the best thing you can do is to be paying that off first. You can also go around looking for cheaper credit cards. There are a lot of credit cards that will give you honeymoon periods. So you have a month or two where they won't charge you any interest, or the rate of interest that they charge is less. So I would say you can certainly do better than 21%. You can do better than 17%. Most banks are quite competitive on this, but it does require a bit of effort on your part to find something a credit card that is less than what you're paying. And certainly anything like a personal loan or a loan for your car, that kind of thing, you need to be paying that off as quickly as possible and far in advance, because approaching a period when you're not going to have the same income that you've got, and that is the case about retirement. You will not have the same amount coming in. You have to reduce the amount of debt, which brings me to my next point.
Right. So, yeah,
it's reducing your expenses. Now, I'm not into serious amounts of austerity, but I do think we have a fairly wasteful kind of lifestyle. Think about the things that you will no longer need when you're retired. And in fact, in this COVID period, I think it's really interesting. We don't need the same level of work clothes. We don't need to spend money on nice shoes, nice suits, nice makeup, all that kind of thing. We can reduce those costs. Spontaneously going out to eat all the time, that actually eats into our income that we have, funds that we have left and that's available to us. And the good thing is that if you think about it, you can actually declutter your house, get rid of all those clothes that you're no longer wearing, and have a bit more space around your house. You don't have to be totally austere about it, but you can save money where possible, and that will give you more money in the end. There's also, these days, one of those really unseen expenses is things like car insurance, medical insurance, which I am one of these, I must admit. I tend to just roll over. The end of the year comes, they send me a reminder saying pay the insurance, and I do. But there's a lot of comparing the market out there. You can usually do a lot better, particularly in medical insurance. I think it's a serious expense that tends to be quite unnoticed. Yeah. And it can be a real savings of hundreds of dollars every year.
Yeah.
And how do you know whether you're spending, how much you're spending? If you ever had to do in the last couple of years an application for a mortgage, they give you a budget tracker and they ask you how much do you really spend. Now, banks know they're sort of these averages that they look at. But it's actually a very useful tool to see what you're doing with your money. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I'm one of these people. I have like to have my coffee outside the house once a day. Let's just say $5 a day, 5 days a week. So $25 a week times 52, whatever that comes to, it's into the thousands, by the time you just, and that's a little thing like coffee. And then you might have the spontaneous, I'll have lunch outside. Yes. And then the other problem that we tend to have is we're locked at home. We're a bit bored. We think, let's do a bit of online shopping. Again, I confess to being guilty of this. Oh, that looks nice. And there goes another bit of money. So I might not be trucking out to the shopping centre, but I am still buying stuff. Mm-hmm. And buying stuff that I can't really wear out. I mean, eventually, hopefully, we will get out to having a normal life again.
But, it will happen, Alice. Reducing expenses, which is your second way of taking control, that was put to me at one time, would I like a 5% pay increase? And it suddenly struck me that if I do what you're suggesting, reduce the expenses of everyday living, and I don't need to be hard on myself, it's the same as giving yourself a pay rise. So
absolutely, it's a great way to see it, I think.
So
and you won't even notice it, it's just a bit of self-control about that. So I've got two other things I'm going to talk about just briefly. One thing briefly, I'm going to talk about your mortgage. If you've still got a mortgage, it's an excellent time to be thinking about refinancing if you've still got a lot left. I mean, my view is that you should be paying off your home loan as soon as you possibly can. And if you're into retirement or post-retirement, you could even use a bit of your super to pay it out completely, because your house is an absolutely asset. It doesn't have any capital gains tax. It's an asset for you for life. So you can do that. But the other thing is refinancing at the moment, it's still reasonably, you know, they're reasonably low rates. I think the interest rates on home loans are going to increase. Everything I see says that. And I would be, I don't know whether you can lock in the same rates as they used to have. Even a 6 months ago, their variable rates and their fixed rates were, the fixed rates were very positive. These days, the fixed rates are going up. So I think they're going to increase. But certainly, this is something you would be thinking about if you've still got a mortgage going on. And the major point, there's a few other things I'm going to talk about as well, but it's talking about the idea of a reverse mortgage. Now, you may not have heard what a reverse mortgage is. It's, so say you have to own your house outright pretty well to be able to do this. I don't think they will do it if you still owe money. So what banks, mostly commercial lenders and private lenders, will lend you money based on the value, the security of your home. Now, there is a government scheme, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But so the idea is, so say you have your house, but you're on the age pension, you haven't got enough money, and you're thinking, I'm really stressed. I've got repairs to do on my house. I need a new car. And all right, I might just want a holiday. But generally, I would say you do it for more serious things than simply wanting a holiday. You say, I need some cash. What am I going to do? So that is what a reverse mortgage is. You go to the bank, and not all banks offer these facilities, let me say that. They say, well, okay, based on the value of your property, we think we can owe you, lend you a certain amount. Mm-hmm. So they're quite strictly controlled, because they set a value. There's a calculation that they do. Interest rate for these kinds of loans is higher than an ordinary home loan or an ordinary loan. So the idea is you borrow, let's just say, $200,000 for just a figure. You do not have to make any repayments on that $200,000. What happens is the interest is added to the amount that you've borrowed. So after 5 years, you will have, and say it's a loan at 8%, it'll be $200,000 at 8% each year over a five-year period. For example, you don't have to repay, but the amount of the loan is added to the amount that you owe. Now, the reverse mortgage, in a sense, has an expectation that you will pass away somewhere soon, and you do not want to do anything else. And this, I've got to say, unfortunately, is the case. So what happens that when your house is sold, the bank takes back, will claim the amount of your loan plus any interest owed out of that final sale process. Mm. Now, that's why I'm saying it depends when you die, because if your house is not that valuable, your house value, the loan will increasing, well, the amount that you owe will keep on increasing. The value of your house might not increase at the same rate. There may not be very much left at the time that you die, right? So if you're planning on giving it to your beneficiaries, you might not have very much left. So you need to be a bit careful about these. Mm. So the government has a scheme called the Home Equity Access Scheme. You can find a lot more serious detail on the Services Australia website, but it's basically the same thing. It's related to your pension. It's related to the value of your house. The scheme used to be that you had to be an aged pensioner. Now you just have to be over the age of 65. So it's quite a nice little scheme. But it basically works on the same principle, that your loan you know, will be repaid when the house is sold, which could be at any time, really. It could be when you die. It could also be when you go into an aged care facility,
yeah,
for example, when you need a bond.
And the government charges will charge
an interest
as well.
Well, yeah. So it's the same idea, basically. I don't know how the two things compare, but it's certainly worth a look at. The reverse mortgages have not been that popular to date. But if you wanted to do something major like repair your house or something like this, it would be well worth having it. And you know, you can make repayments if you wanted to. So it can work for you in that case. Mm-hmm. So the other thing, two small things I'm going to talk about, in addition to that, before retirement, it's a really useful thing to find out whether or not you're eligible for the Centrelink pension. Mm-hmm. It is not a simple thing, unfortunately. So they, like everything else. But it's really vital for you to know. There are two tests that Centrelink applies. One is the income test, one is the asset test. Mm-hmm. So you can still earn a certain amount of money after you retire. It varies a bit. It's probably a couple of $100 a week. And you could still have some eligibility for a part pension. And as I strongly believe that a pension is something that we as taxpayers or for all our lives are entitled to and should apply for in any sense of the word. And the other thing is assets. It depends whether you're a single person or a part of a couple. There is a difference as to whether or not you're eligible. So that is worth going down and just seeing how that works out for you. Mm. But there are lots of other concessions that pensioners, I suppose, being on a pension, but seniors. So I think the seniors card is a great thing. Seniors card, I just ordered a new pair of glasses. I got a concession because I've got a seniors card. Go to the movies, you've got a seniors card, get in a lot, you know, $5 cheaper or whatever. And travel cards, I think, are a wonderful idea because you can use them to travel regionally on you know, $2.50 will take you a long way. Mm. So those sorts of benefits are a great thing. I know Seniors Australia also puts out a discount booklet where you can get discounts for, you know, work like plumbing or electricians if you need them. Also worth it in every way, I think.
Yes. Yeah, so it's like I live in the state of Victoria, Alice, which is different from where you live. Oh, and I know when I turned 60 or anyway, that decade, I received a seniors card from the state government, and the letter went something like, this is a little reward for your contribution to the state over your working life. And yeah, it was very nice to receive that and to be able to use it. So
I still do. I was really pleased that I went to my local for a swim in my local pool, and they said, looked at me, I was asking for a concession, are you really a concession person? I said, yes, here's my card. I thought, great, I'm glad they don't believe me. Maybe they were being polite.
Look, Alice, those, you know, just recapping, that's all, you know, taking that sense of control over our finances. You've suggested reviewing our debts, reducing the expenses of the daily living, and refinancing your mortgage. And it, like you said, it is a good time if you can manage a lower interest rate. And then you've informed us about the ins and outs of reverse mortgages for when we might need a bit of capital to do some things. But once again, it gets back to what we talked about last week, the importance of owning your own home. Demonstrates that again. So thanks, Alice. And you've reminded us about going to Centrelink and finding out what we are eligible for, depending on our assets or our income. when we hit retirement. Yeah, so fantastic. Thanks, Alice, so much. And also we've just mentioned the notion that things can be different in different states within Australia, so we need to check locally. Yeah, so what else have you got for us today in future? Oh,
I've only got one more little thing, that's all, just to bring it up again, is superannuation. Mm-hmm. So if you, it is a very good time to review superannuation. We tend to have a number of super funds running at once. Don't do this. Try and roll them all over into one, whichever one you like. You know, now that they've got, the government is producing performance reviews of the different super funds. And one of the big reasons, I mean, not only because you want a well-performing super, although fund, which we'd like to think they're all going to be terrific, but that may not always be the case in the future. But it's to cut out the amount of fees that you're paying on having a super fund. And that can be considerable. And I had an unpleasant experience on that, where, you know, I was being charged fees for advice. They were called advice fees, for advice that I certainly never received. They have stopped that to an extent. But, you know, there are, you know, how is your super fund invested is part of that issue, because you've got funds. You can choose how you want. Do you want to be conservative, balanced, or do you want to have a high risk? Do you want something that really returns a lot? All those things are actually require a bit of forethought. Mm. And don't forget to make a binding nomination. So
what's that, Alice?
A binding nomination is, so should you pass away and still have funds left in the super fund, it's telling the superannuation trustee who should get the remainder of the funds that you still have there. And it generally does not form part of your estate. It's not usually covered by your will unless you particularly ask for it. So that is worth reviewing. They usually ask for a review every 3 years. So that's worthwhile doing as well.
Actually,
so that's probably it.
Just while we're on the binding nomination, one of the institutes that I deal with, they have just created an ongoing binding nomination I don't have to go back every 3 years. And the other one, the other little super fund, they do send me a reminder, because when mm-hmm. I first started doing that, I thought, oh gosh, how will I remember 3 years down the track?
That's right. So, well, the thing is that otherwise the trustee isn't required to give the money to anybody, basically. You know, hopefully you will live a long time and there'll be no money left in your system.
That's what I'm aiming at.
Right. Yes. But for some of us, just in case, it's sort of an extra little gift outside of your will, and it's going to be in cash. I've got and I will tell a not very happy story about this. I had clients, I had a young man who came to me, and he was only in his early mid-20s. He was in the process of separating and he had a child. He unfortunately took his own life, and there was a question about where his super fund went. So fortunately he'd made a binding nomination and his child could, it was a bit more complicated than that. His mother, who also, he was actually living at the, when he separated, he went to live with his mother. His mother also made a claim on his super fund, but this was so that the trustee could make a proper, you know, it was quite a lot of money. You know, he'd been working for some years and it made a big difference to the remaining family. So it is actually worth thinking about.
Yeah. Oh, such good advice every time we chat, Alice. So
we hope.
We are so thankful for your diligence and then all the research you do to bring us the real picture. That's just so appreciated. So next time we chat, Alice, we're going to take a deeper dive into the legal aspects of mm-hmm. retirement. Now, I know we've mentioned it before, but next week is going to be a deeper dive, and you're going to talk about divorce and remarriage.
I am.
Yeah, as well as the basic things that you mentioned last time.
Well, I suppose I could talk. Yeah, I was going to talk about it in terms of wills and that kind of thing, I suppose. But yes, there's a lot to talk about if you're going to talk about divorce and marriage and at later years. It's a much more complicated thing than when you're younger.
But right.
Let's just wait to see what I come up with.
Oh, Alice, you're a gem. Okay. Thanks so much, yeah. Alice.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, we'll catch you next time.
Bye.